Good evening.
That it is.
Tonight we're still in the book of Acts, chapter 25, and also chapter 26. We'll probably primarily focusing on chapter 26 tonight, and I expect we'll be able to make it through. A lot of review in chapter 26 of that which we've studied in the past, where Paul is recounting, giving King Agrippa part of his story. And I think it's good sometimes that people share their stories because it brings encouragement to others and us as well. Encouragement is given. So as our custom has been, let us read the chapter over. And before we begin our discussion, we'll read chapter 26. Does anybody want to volunteer to read chapter 26?
I'll read 26.
All right, thank you.
Then Agrippa said unto Paul, "Thou art permitted to speak for thyself." Then Paul stretched forth his hand and answered for himself, "I thank myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day, before thee touching all the things thereof, I am accused of the Jews, especially because I know thee to be expert in all customs and questions which are among the Jews. Wherefore I beseech thee to hear me patiently. A manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among my own nation, to Jerusalem know all the Jews, which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify that after the most greatest set of my religion, I will be a Pharisee. And now I stand and am judged from the hope of the promise made of God unto our fathers, unto which promise our 12 tribes instantly serving God today and not hope to come. For which hope say, in Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews. Why should it be thought a thing incredible with you that God should raise the dead? I verily thought with myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth. Which thing I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints did I shut up in prison, and received authority the chief priest, and when they were put to death, I gave my voice against them. And I punished them off in every synagogue, and compelled them to blaspheme. And being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them even unto strange cities. Whereupon, as I went to Damascus with authority and permission from the chief priest, at midday of the evening, I saw the way a light from heaven, above the brightness of the sun, rising round about, and then was turning with me. And when we were all fallen to the earth, I heard a voice speaking unto me, saying, to the Hebrew John, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It is hard for thee to kick against the bread. And I said, Who art thou, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. But rise and stand upon thy feet, for I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister and a witness both of these things which thou hast seen and of the things in which I will appear unto thee. Delivering thee from the people and from Gentiles to whom now I send thee, to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith to his enemy. Wherefore, O King Agrippa, I will not disobey the heavenly vision, but show first and with them the message. And in Jerusalem, throughout all the coast of Judea, and then to the Gentiles, and they should appear and turn to God and work. these coffers the Jews caught me in the temple and went about to kill me. Having therefore obtained the help of God, I continued to live this day, witnessing both to the small and great, saying none other things that those which prophets and Moses did say should come. That Christ should suffer, and that he should be the curse, and should drive us from the people, and should show light to the people, and to the Gentiles. And as he thus spake for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, All thou art beside thyself, much learning doth make thee mad. But he said, I am not mad, O noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. For the king knoweth of these things, before whom also I speak freely, for I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him, for the things was not undone in the country. King of Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. Paul said, I would to God that none of them, but also all that hear this day, were both almost and altogether such as I am, except in his thoughts. And when he had thus spoken, the king rose up, and the governor, Bernice, and they sat with him. And when they were gone aside, they talked between themselves, saying, This man doth nothing worthy of death or bodies. And said the governor, This man might have been sent at memory,
All right, thank you for reading that this evening. You made it through. You made it to the end. That's what counts. We're on page number 57. Question number 9, I believe, is what we got down to. Last week, it seemed like we was just getting into the story good, it seems. We have Festus allowing the people to come from Jerusalem to where he's at, and they're in Caesarea. And now King Agrippa has come, or is in the process of getting there, not about this point in the story. And so he begins to say, I will hear this matter. Question number 9 says, What surprised Festus about the accusations brought against Paul?
You may differ with this, but the fact that he had done nothing worthy of death.
Yeah, that was actually one of the reasons I put down, or at least thought about. Verse 18, he says, Against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation against such things as I supposed. He was expecting different type of accusations. I think that's what the surprising part was. And what you said a little further down, I mean, we see the surprise there too. I see nothing worthy of death, or nothing worthy of chains. He didn't even see anything to accuse him. To accuse him as far as the law is concerned. So it's kind of like, why are they doing this? Of course, we know the reason why. Second part is Festus summed their accusations up in 2 or 3 points. What are they? To me, this was a little harder to answer, I thought. I looked at verse 19. He summed it up in 2 things, it seems. They were questions that was against their own superstition, as he called it. Their own superstition or their own religion. And the second thing was Jesus is alive. And which one feeds into the other. And of course they would not acknowledge that Jesus is alive. They would not acknowledge the resurrection, in other words.
I think you're on the right road here, because Paul made a comment that this wasn't done in our today's language, in evangelism.
Right, it was out in the open for everybody to see. That's the appeal he makes to Agrippa. Question number 10 is, what was Agrippa's desire at this time? Or at least this point in the lesson. He wanted to hear it himself. Yeah, I'll hear what he has to say. So it seems that listening to Festus, it kind of got his curiosity up. So he decides he's going to hear him. He's going to hear what he has to say. Second part says, what does Luke mean when he says Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp? What does that mean, with great pomp?
They were elites, so to speak, in our today's time. They made it known that they were elite. In my mind, have you ever seen somebody supposedly in the East over there that'd be carried on the shoulder of four men?
The poles and the seat, the throne.
Me, that would be
pomp and circumstance. Yep. Well, whenever even today when the queen, when there's certain ceremonies they do, usually it's coronation of someone, that's what they do that. They still do that, have them carried on their shoulders. One time I witnessed it, if I'm remembering it correctly, was whenever she... I don't know what you call it. It's not knighted, but whenever she made her son, I guess the next heir, the official next heir, and he went as what's he? The Prince of Wales, Charles. Yeah, I think he's considered the Prince of Wales. So they did this in Wales, and if my memory serves me correctly, you go back and look that part of the time she was being carried in, like what you're talking about, big pomp and circumstance. Then they did it with great display, great show. I've thought about that perhaps, you know, how it is when the president comes through town. What happens? Everything shuts down in the path. You go to certain countries, African countries, since I'm more familiar with a couple of them. You know, whenever a president, a dignitary steps off the plane, they've got a red carpet rolled out. They've got flowers. They've got bands. They've got all kinds of things ready there to welcome them. Great pomp and circumstance. Or we'd say great pomp, I guess. It does. The reason for, number 11 is, what privilege did Paul probably have at this time that no other apostle had, with possibly the exception of James?
He was able to defend himself, and he was before the king, and he was going to see Caesar.
What allowed him to be able to do this, though?
He was a Roman citizen.
Roman citizen. That's what I was thinking, the Roman citizen. Because that would have been the unique characteristic, because the rest of them were, or most of the rest of them were of Jewish descent. Even though they may have been under... you know, under Roman rule.
I read, and you can read anything, find anything.
That's right.
But in the process of talking about James being the first pope and stuff, but it referred to the fact that supposedly several of the apostles were Roman citizens.
I find that interesting. What you remember what it was, what you were reading?
On the internet.
Oh, okay. Wasn't out of a book.
No. But anyway, when they talk about James being the first pope and all that kind of stuff, you know, somebody like Roman Catholic pope, when you look at Peter, they say the same thing about him. So.
Yeah. It used to be, it seemed like it used to be more common than it is today, people that would study themselves into the truth.
One thing.
And the message is the same. I mean, we're reading about it. It's the same message we talk about today.
One of the things that I find interesting, and I don't know this to be true, but one of those things that you read and you study and stuff, that the Catholics actually give water baptism immersion. And then there was somebody that could not be baptized, and they went baptized with the sprinkling or pouring, maybe pouring immersion or something.
Yeah, that would not surprise me at all. Well, you know, many of the religions, we'd say that the U.S. religions or Western world religions, they start out being baptizers. That wasn't uncommon 200 years ago.
And the same thing about instrumental music.
Nobody did it.
Instrumental music, people didn't do instrumental music.
Yeah, and then somebody decided it needed to be done. Said they changed things. Next part of our question, number 11, it says, what shows the importance attached to this particular hearing?
The fact that he was able to defend himself, I think, is one of the facts that it's hard to say that came over to United States became a country. That we had the right to defend ourselves. You go back and look at England and other countries, they weren't allowed to defend themselves. What it would be an accusation made to the king or whoever, and they would be executed or have to endure being jailed or whatever in a dungeon or whatever. They couldn't defend themselves or speak to themselves.
Number 12 is, what were the Jews crying?
They did not want Paul to live, because of that they got very emotional.
Yeah, they said he oughtn't to live, verse 24. That's pretty big. I mean, that's some big hatred right there. Whenever you've decided that someone needs to, or they have forfeited their life because of what you don't like about them. Next part of the question is, what had Festus not found?
He hadn't found anything worthy of death.
He hadn't found anything worthy of death. One, the accusers want him dead. The judge says, or at least the initial judge says, I don't see anything wrong. There's nothing here. There's nothing to do, nothing to convict him on. What next part? What seems to be reasonable to Festus at this time? Or seemed unreasonable? Well, that, verse 27, says, for it seemed to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. Talking about sending to Caesar. So he felt that he needed to, the crimes laid against him need to be sent with him as well. And at this time, there was nothing to lay against him. And Paul has already insisted that he wants to go see Caesar over this matter.
It's my understanding, you may correct me on this. Once he had made an appeal to Caesar, they couldn't do anything about that. They had to send him to Caesar.
Yep, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. Been set free. That set him free. That's going to be said here in 26, chapter 26. Now, question number 13 is why was Paul happy to speak before Agrippa?
I'm doing a lot of speaking. I think Paul was happy to speak before anybody about Christ and being crucified. If you remember at Ephesus, he went in that big Colosseum to preach the gospel. And so he was not afraid to preach the gospel to anybody.
When he made that statement in the book of Romans, chapter 1, verse 16, he wasn't lying, was he? He was not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. Huh? Also, the end of verse 2 of chapter 26, you know, he's excited to talk about all the things whereof I am accused of the Jews. He's ready to talk about it. Those things testifying the charges against him. The next part of the question says, what remark did Paul make at the very beginning that gained Agrippa's attention?
I think it's the fact that he buffed him up, so to speak.
Yeah. Hey, maybe he complimented him, and I thought about verse 1 as well, where it says, where Agrippa says to Paul, thou art permitted to speak for thyself. And, I don't know. Let me get that. I may back off of that one a little bit. But I wondered in reading that if there was something in there that, you know, he was, you're defending yourself, you know, was a little surprising. But, The complimenting, anytime you want to get somebody's attention, many times compliments will do it. Complimenting them as well, especially somebody that's in authority. Question number 14 is, what about Paul was well known by the Jews?
The fact that he is, I'm going to say, youth and things, how that he was a very vigilant Jew. He was a Pharisee, and how that he was well educated. He said that Peter commanded him, and that what he did and how he did it growing up and before he became a Christian was very noticeable to them.
Yep, he stuck out like a sore thumb. Yep. Amongst the people. That's right. But the way, yeah, he's leading up to that. Obviously in the story, he's leading up to telling about that. That his manner, the way he lived his life was not a secret. People knew, they noticed even when he was young. And the next part of the question is, why would Paul's statement being a Pharisee make the Jews' charge about violating the law seem more unreasonable?
Sadducees and Pharisees.
Yep.
And the Pharisees were, you might find something to contradict me on this, but the Pharisees were more prevalent. They were in the majority, so to speak, versus the Sadducees. If I read right, the Sadducees was more of a minority type, as we would say today, their opinion.
Yeah, because it seems that throughout, even in Jesus' day, it seemed like they would usually have the prevailing opinion. You know, when they were in a group, it would end up being a lot of what they had to say that would prevail.
If you're a Sadducee, why go to the temple? Why worship?
Right, because there's nothing beyond the grave.
Right.
So in their teaching.
Seemed like if they were more indoctrinated, they studied the scrolls and things more, and they came to the wrong conclusion, but they were presenting themselves as being more religious.
Mm-hmm. I also thought about why this being, about him violating the law seemed more unreasonable. was he made the statement that he was of the straightest set, or the ones that was the strictest. And him already divulging what his lineage is, Agrippa would have known this, most likely. Question number 15 is, for what reason did Paul say he was being judged? Verse number 6. Yep, the hope of the promise of God unto the fathers. In other words, he's going back to the prophets, the prophecies. Notice as we're going through this, the logics behind this. He's building the case. He's building the case for Christ.
He's always like people do in order to ask 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep.
Amen.
Yep.
What about Paul, well known by the Jews, 14, verse 3, especially because I don't need to be expert, because my manner of life is, verse 4,
yep.
My manner of life from my youth, which was at first among my own nation in Jerusalem, know all the Jews. In other words, he was well known by all of them.
The way, when I read this and look at it, I think if somebody would have mentioned Paul, somebody would have known somebody that knew him. That's kind of the way I took it, because that's how people become well known. My grandfather was well known in the county. He's not anymore because he's been dead too long, but he was well known in the county where I lived, where I grew up. And there was probably two reasons why he was well known. First, he was the one that led singing at all the gospel meetings, because there was a period of time where you had a guest song leader and a guest speaker. That used to be the norm. And so basically, beginning of the gospel meeting season, all the way up to the fall, that's what he done. So he knew people all over the county. And second, the reason that I believe he was well known is for the non-church people, he was a member of the county court. He's also one of he also performed a lot of weddings because of his position within the county government. And so therefore his name would show up in things in the newspaper and all that. So most people then knew who he's talking about when his name was mentioned. And they may not have known him personally, but they knew who you were talking about. And I feel like that this was kind of the thing that's going on with Paul here a little bit. In religious circles, far as the Jews was concerned in Jerusalem, they knew exactly who he was. And then outside of that, they probably knew of him. And especially when he began to persecute, I bet that spread like wildfire. Yes.
To me, there's an interesting thing that I observed when I was going down South America and doing missions. They didn't have telephones. Basically, you could say people didn't have telephones. When we got off the airplane, everybody knew that we were coming. Everybody
yep.
knew that we were coming. Everybody knew who we were.
Yep.
And today, I don't think we communicate as well because we have telephones, the internet, and all that. We don't know. We don't hear about people because it's not word of mouth.
Another thing I find that I thought was interesting, I've gone back and read some of these old newspaper clippings. People used to put things in the newspaper that they wouldn't do today. Like, I've read letters in the local newspaper where so-and-so came to visit so-and-so. And they just talk about their visit. Little paragraph, it'd be in the newspaper. They'd submit it. Yeah, yeah. That's modern day faith or old time Facebook, wasn't it?
People took the time when I was a boy and a young man to communicate with all the neighbors.
Knew them all, knew them by name, how many kids they had. And
you'd see people that walk around the whole neighborhood talking business, seeing if they need anything, all that kind of stuff.
You know where you do see some of that going on still today? It's in the black community. Because they're more family-oriented, which is a good thing. Question number 15 is, for what reason did Paul say he was being, well, we did that, being judged for the hope of God unto the promise of the hope? Let me start over. The hope of the promise of God unto the fathers, verse number 6. Next part of the question, next page 58, is what particular promise of God does Paul refer to here? Well, it talked about the fulfillment of the prophecies, right? And the raising of the dead. Verse number 7, under the promise of the 12 tribes. There we go. Once again, feeding information that Agrippa's familiar with. The 12 tribes instantly serving God day and night. Hope to come. For which hope's sake, King Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews. Number 16, if God is all-powerful, as the Jews believed, what should easily be believed by them?
That he rose Christ from the dead.
That's right, that he rose Christ from the dead. The resurrection, it should be easy for them to believe if they believed that God is all-powerful. Next part of the question says, how does Paul's statement in verse 9 show that a man is not right necessarily just because he thinks he's right?
He did things even though he thought he was doing what God wanted him to do. He was doing things contrary to Jesus Christ.
Yep. He thought in himself that he was doing right.
Thank you.
What's that? Say that again, I missed it.
You know, when he went to Samuel's house.
Oh, you said Naaman. Yeah. Okay, now I'm with you. Go ahead.
Because when Samuel didn't come out, send his servant out, he got mad and said, behold, I thought he was going to come out, wave things around and all that kind of stuff. They told me to go build 7 times in a dirty Jordan.
Yep. Wasn't what I thought it ought to be. What I find interesting about that story is he got mad and it looked like he wasn't going to do it, and then he changed his mind. And then he saw the benefit of obedience whenever he changed his mind.
Well, the servant told him, said, if he had asked you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it?
And the obvious answer is yes.
But anyway, to me, that's the whole, I thought, always is something that sticks with me. Just because you think it doesn't mean it, that's the proper thing to do.
Yep. That's right. I'm going to highlight that in my Bible. Oh, we're thinking alike, huh? Well, this is not much different. I can actually read the writing with this instead of if I wrote it with a pen. Question number 17 is Paul was obedient to the vision he received from heaven. Name places where the people to whom Paul preached. Find out in about verse 20. Huh? Yep, and to the Gentiles. So he went from Damascus after he received the vision. He was obedient to what the vision told him to do, and he did what he was supposed to. He begins to tell the story. He says, he's talking about he showed, but he's talking about I showed or but showed first unto them at Damascus. He's talking about the same message that he's sharing with him. I believe that's what he's talking about. Think about this idea of Damascus, Jerusalem, the coast of Judea, and to the Gentiles. Boy, that's a lot. That's a big area, isn't it? Because, you know, we've been studying the first, second, third, fourth missionary journey in the previous chapters. He covered a lot of ground, multiple times, establishing and strengthening these churches. Number 18 is, despite the charges and efforts of the Jews, Paul had continued witnessing with whose help? That's it, with God's help. Verse 22. With God's help, he was able to do these things. What does both to small and great mean?
It didn't make any difference who it was. He was going to teach Christ to be crucified.
That's right. Didn't matter who it was, whether they was poor, had nothing, or were they rich and had it all. And this proves it, because he's preaching to all these high people. And it doesn't matter who it is, small and great, those that have no reputation, those that have a great reputation.
I think of him and R.C. Lewis.
Yeah, because they were the great thinkers, wasn't they? They considered to be great or high people. Question number 19 is, what were some of the things which the law of Moses and the prophets would say come?
The new kingdom.
Yeah. They say that Christ should suffer. There's something coming. That's what Moses and the prophets would say, and they were pointing forward to Christ. They were pointing to Christ Jesus. And that he should suffer. Let's see, verse 23 says that he should suffer, and what else? And be the first that should rise from the dead and should show the light unto the people and to the Gentiles.
If you think about Daniel's statue, different kingdoms, the fact that it goes in the fact to be a new king, it will never be done away.
That's right. Never be destroyed. What I find interesting about that vision, that prophecy there, it's still at this point in history, it's still being unfolded, because the last kingdom is there in existence, and so whenever the Roman Empire is done away, has fallen, the prophecy's been fulfilled, because the church is there. The one that will never be destroyed. It is now gaining strength. It is being built.
I always think about when he talks about the rock that's cut out of the mountain.
Yep. Destroys. Yep. Comes tumbling down, destroys everything except itself. Number 20. What effect did Paul's sermon have on Festus? He shouted, didn't he? He thought, Paul, you're beside yourself. You're mad. You're crazy. Too much learning. Yeah, you're too smart for your own britches. That's what he said, wasn't it? Who did Paul call a witness to the truthfulness of what he said? Now look at verse 26. Who did Paul call as a witness to faithfulness of what he said? Remember, it's got to be King Agrippa, because Festus was not steeped in the old law, the way of the Jews. And Agrippa was steeped in the way of the Jews. He knew it. He knew the prophecy, so it had. I believe it had to be him. He called him as a witness, even though he's listening to him.
He talked about the fact that none of these things that occurred without his preview or his sight.
That's right. Yep. Got question 21 is, what statement did Paul make which shows Agrippa was familiar with the prophets? This is easy. I know you believe. I know thou believest. That's what he told him, verse 27. Who was almost persuaded to be a Christian? Yep, verse 28, then Agrippa said unto Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
On that, I've heard several sermons about that. And some of them have said that he was saying it in a rhetorical manner. And you, to me, I think he was all convinced him. He knew what Paul was saying was true, but he just couldn't get over the hump because of people.
And yep.
And have you ever heard whether Agrippa later became a Christian?
I don't know that we know. I don't know that it's recorded for us to know. But some believe that he actually did.
Well, that's what I was fixing to say. I have read that he did, but to me, it's something that's hanging in the air.
Yeah, I don't think you can know, but some have said that they believe that he did because of secular history, of some things that's been found in history that shows that he had done some, quote, Christian things. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a believer. I mean, it seemed like the evidence was one of those things of where to define the evidence. You had to stand on one leg and reach with the other hand sort of thing. So it was a reach to figure it out, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Many times when you see people that believe and they don't respond to it, they eventually usually harden their hearts over time. It upsets them that they need to obey the truth, and then they put it off, and they don't obey the truth, and then it gets to the point of where they have to harden their hearts, or they're going to drive themselves crazy. And then they harden their heart against Christ and never respond, and that's a sad thing whenever that happens. And I have witnessed that a couple times in my lifetime. And most time, once you know the heart is hardened, is when they drop out of church, or they quit attending the services. Then you know they've hardened their heart to the point of they're not going to do it. And that's a sad thing. Name two other times the word Christian is mentioned. Yep. That is in Acts chapter 11, verse 26, right? All right, what's another time? Huh? 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 16. Yep, that's it. If any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. So that's a good verse there for us. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 16. So far as I know, these are the only three mentions of the word Christian in the New Testament, or in the Bible, really. You would think that that would be something that you'd see over and over and over again, wouldn't you? But kind of remember the circumstance in a lot of this. This was new. And many times they were the people that were labeled as people that were Christians or of the way. They were persecuted. A little further on in history from where we're at in this lesson, we learn a lot from secular history that people were highly, highly, highly persecuted for claiming to be of that way or to be Christians. So that's a special word. It's a special thing. It's a special, special name.
If I understand it correctly, it means Christian means Christ-like.
That's right. Christ-like. Next part of the question is, what was Paul's desire to all men?
He said, I would to God that God would allow for all, also all that hear me this day, both almost and all together, such as I am, except these bodies.
Yep, he wanted them to be like him, wanted them to be believers. Number 23 was, what was the conclusion reached about Paul? Yep. Yep, nothing worthy of death or of bonds. And finally, what was he not, why was he not set at liberty?
Because of his
appeal. Yep, because he appealed to Caesar. Yep, they had no choice but to take him to Caesar. And this is the end of this lesson. Does anybody have any additional comments or questions? If not, we'll pick up with chapter 27 next week in our, for our lesson.